Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Hello from Taiwan. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're pretty tired right now. Katie and I just biked uphill from the coast to get to this campsite. I think we probably went up about 200 meters above sea level. Now we've got a great view for our reward. We get to watch the waves crashing into the ocean and have a beer. But we're a bit worn out from this uphill biking battle. I'm recording this from inside my tent right now. Katie's in the shower, so I've got a few minutes to myself. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this introduction, so let's just get into this, into the meat of the podcast. But before I do, one quick word. Of course, if you've been following me, you know that my second book, 1,000 Days Between, Part 2, in Pursuit of the South American Dream, is available now on Amazon. I'm going to put a link to that on the show notes for this podcast. If you're interested in checking it out, it's all about my 2.5-year adventure in South America. I really encourage you to check it out. Thank you so much for all of your support. I think tomorrow Katie and I are going to hit the southernmost point in Taiwan. We can do it. We're going to have to put in a long day on the bicycles. We've been biking around this island. I think we'll hit the southernmost point tomorrow. And then it remains to be seen what we'll do. I think we'll have to bike at least another day north. But we'll hit an area of Taiwan that's just not so nice for biking. Big population, lots of wind, not much to look at, lots of traffic on the roads. So our real adventurous time in this country may be coming to a close pretty soon. And then we're off to the Philippines for Christmas in a couple of weeks. Whew, it's been a whirlwind trip, but we are doing it, and we're traveling for a year in total. We're getting close to the midpoint here with Christmas coming up. I hope you guys have enjoyed following along with us on this journey. We'll definitely do a podcast about our experiences in Taiwan. We've noted a lot of positives and negative things about this country or this territory of China, depending on how you look at it. At any rate, my guest today is David Shand, and we met David a couple of days ago. We were just talking about how we were a little bit down on, there are some downsides of biking in general. One of those is that you tend to just blow through a lot of things because there's just not that much time in the day, especially this time of year. You get less than 12 hours of daylight. You got to make the most of it. So we were biking rather hard, and Katie made some comment like how she hasn't done a lot of cultural stuff, doesn't know much about the indigenous people here, etc., etc. And all of a sudden we saw a sign that said, like, prehistoric museum is ahead or something like that. So we stopped, and we were in this town of Chisheng, and stopped on the side of the road, pulled out the Google Maps. And as soon as we started looking at the map on the phone to figure out where this museum was, this dude came riding up to us on his scooter with a big smile on his face. He did a U-turn just, and a double take, I think, because there were foreigners. And this guy's also a foreigner. He's from South Africa. And he came up to us and he just said, like, hey, you guys need any help? And we said, yeah, we're looking for this museum. And he said, well, the museum is opening today. It's their grand opening. Now, I'm pretty sure this was a different museum. But at any rate, he started telling us about this town that he lived in, this Chisheng town. And it sounded pretty cool. He encouraged us rather heavily to stay. And so we ended up staying for the rest of the day, even though that meant that we had only biked maybe 10 kilometers because it was pretty early still in our day. And then we ended up staying one more day. And David is a character. You're going to hear it in this podcast. I had so much fun talking to him. We jumped from topic to topic. It was a great time. I think that's really all I need to say, though. Let's just get into it and listen to my talk. I think the one other thing is that this comes in three segments, and I stitched the first two together. They sound pretty seamless, but you can tell we paused in the middle. And then there's one more time at the end where we had to pack up from this picnic that we were having on this little pond. But we didn't really want to call it a day with the podcast. So we came back and recorded another half an hour or so. It'll be pretty obvious where this happens. But that's really all I need to say for now. Let's jump into my conversation with David Shand. I was going to ask you, I keep forgetting how to say the name of the town.
Maybe don't ask me. I probably get the tone wrong, but Zhisheng, it means upper lake. And this is the lake.
This is
the pond.
This is the upper lake.
This is the upper lake. Yeah, because it's kind of inland and it's kind of above sea level.
Okay.
So, of course it's above sea level, right? So, but it's kind of an odd phenomenon to have it here.
Yeah, it doesn't look natural.
In this big valley.
Right.
But it's because of the Bainan River, which is in that valley.
Oh, that feeds into the lake.
That is one of the biggest rivers on the island.
Okay.
It's a big boy, yeah, and it comes down out of that valley. It's a big drain basin and extremely steep mountains. During typhoon season, I mean, if you go and have a look at the river mouth itself, well, not the mouth, the actual river where, we're talking about a kilometer wide.
The river is?
The river is a kilometer wide.
That's huge.
But it doesn't... obviously, you only see this during a typhoon.
Okay.
It's quite spectacular. I mean, on a big typhoon day, you go out there and you drive out the next day. Obviously, you wouldn't go there during the typhoon. That's a bit crazy. But take the car out there or the bikes.
Bring your kayak.
No.
No?
No. There's so much stuff.
All the debris,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, trees. Yeah.
Makes it more fun.
Yeah. And it's really dirty water. It's not as bad water. It's just brown. I mean, it's carrying so
it's
much.
It's got to have a lot of sediment
so
in it.
So much silt, yeah. But it's a spectacular scene just to see this thing barreling down. And it goes from a nice, pleasant little trickle to this 1 kilometer wide rumbling monster that just pounds through.
Wow.
And that becomes a flood valley.
The whole thing floods? Does the lake?
Well, this one, I've got photos of this lake going up to basically the car park, as high as the building there.
Sure.
Yeah, where the toilets are and so on.
Probably doubles in size at least.
Yeah, I've seen the boating house here, totally submerged. Hmm. Went all the way up to this tree over here. Then it floods that side as well. So.
Oh, okay.
And that's a blessing because we've got these lotus flowers that are almost like a disease taking over typhoon season being the end of summer. By the end of summer, it really starts getting a little bit much. The lotus flowers there's too much. You can obviously see it. And there's just this little bit of water left. And it's a problem. So the typhoon takes care of that, floods them. Well, it floods them and it puts silt on their leaves and then that stops the photosynthesis and then they die.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, because of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird...
It's like a Martian thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's an attack.
It's
a natural way of dealing with a mess.
Yeah. Huh.
They've had issues in the past where there haven't been typhoons. I mean, last year was huge. This year was fairly... We only had three.
Huh.
Last year we had five in a row.
Wow.
We had a very bad season last year.
Okay.
Very wet.
Are we past that now? No more.
Yeah,
typhoon
we're
season?
Done.
Yeah, okay. I doubt
you'll see a typhoon at this stage of the game.
About a month ago in Japan, we got two.
Yes.
One right before we came. Yes. I'm sure it hit Taiwan too.
No. It came. Well, no. It started.
Or near Taiwan.
It started out, and they all start in the Pacific, and then they choose their direction, as they do. And I mean, there's always a depression, and you watch it, and then the news starts, and everyone starts predicting.
Sure.
It's the poor Philippines, man. Those oaks.
Oh, they get hammered?
Jesus, I feel so sorry for those oaks. They get hammered every year, like direct hits every year. And then often they hit Philippines, and then it turns and comes up to Taiwan.
Got it. Right.
If it goes out to Japan, it generally doesn't come to us or to Philippines. It's normally it normally hooks a right or a northerly direction, I guess.
Sure.
If you look at it that way. And goes up to Japan. We had one coming through the Taiwan Straits, which is quite rare.
Oh, right in the middle between Taiwan and the mainland.
Yeah, and the mainland. And then it hits Hong Kong. And that's when Hong Kong has some really big damage. Macau and Hong Kong got badly flooded this year.
Did they?
There was some great footage of, you know, cars floating down roads and stuff like that in Macau.
Wow.
And they haven't seen stuff like that in 10 years. You know?
So they're not really prepared for it either.
No, they are. I mean, it's a phenomenon here, and it exists, and everyone knows, and they've all got procedures, and the government's got ways to deal with it.
Okay.
But just Hong Kong just doesn't get it that often because we're the buffer.
Sure.
Taiwan takes the hit.
Yeah.
And we normally get, you know, smacked on the east coast first. And what happens is it gets stuck on this central mountain.
Right.
So it can't get over.
Then it gets weak.
It just tears you apart. Drops stuff on you. Yeah.
Mm. That's terrifying. I don't come from an area with any hurricanes at all. We have tornadoes, but not hurricanes.
You're in the Midwest, right?
Right.
Yeah, you'd have tornadoes. You'd have the big
twisties. We get them. They're not nearly as big, obviously, but you don't get any warning. Or you get maybe a 20-minute warning. Like
the finger of God.
Right. I guess so. You see that sky turning green. And
is it a green color? Is that what
weird,
you're looking
yeah,
for?
It's funky, man.
Oh,
it looks
wow.
weird.
Okay.
And they say when you hear a tornado coming, it sounds like a train.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You think you hear a train on the way.
Now, we've just had one.
Tornado.
In South Africa, which is totally odd.
Hmm.
It's like there's no historical evidence of tornadoes in in Southern Africa.
Huh.
It's just, and we just had recently, and I think, I mean, I don't want to go there and talk about climate change and stuff, but.
Yeah. Well, you got to ask
so,
that question.
So, yeah, you got to ask yourself.
Right.
Like, damn.
It's changing.
And it was huge.
I mean,
one of my mates actually posted footage. They were on it and they could see it.
Uh-huh.
And it like ripped up farmhouses. It was a biggie. I mean, we have whirlwinds.
Yeah.
We have little dust storms.
Yeah.
But this was a real Mr. It was a big boy. And he came
F5
and,
or whatever
he
they
came
call
and
it.
Killed some cows and, you know, did some weird shit.
You ever see that movie where the tornado comes and picks up the cow and it's mooing
flying
through the air?
All the Helen Hunt and
Twister, I think it was called.
When they were in the eye and they had the leather strap and they had to tie it on the pole.
right.
It was his ex.
Even a love story.
There was a love story in the middle of the Twister.
I don't remember that part.
I think they kissed in the eye of the storm.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
Totally realistic.
I've
could
been.
Totally
have you been in an eye of a typhoon?
No, I've never been in
odd.
Even the outside.
No, it's
nothing.
Odd. It's odd. I experienced it in Taipei.
Mm.
And it was a monster. I forget the year. I forget the name of the typhoon, but it was a big boy. And I think they're girls. Eh? They call them by female names, I think.
You know what? Just a little tangent. Apparently, my parents told me, they used to always call them by girls' names, at least in the American side, the hurricanes.
Okay.
And
well, you're hurricanes. Yeah, we're typhoons.
We call them hurricanes.
It depends on the origin of the ocean.
Right. Okay.
Did
that's
you know
why
that?
Is that why it is? I never
anything,
knew anything.
Something that originates in the Indian Ocean is called a monsoon.
Oh, okay.
Something that.
Oh, and that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
something
it,
that
I thought monsoon was just a big storm. Okay.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Oh, okay.
And anything that originates in the Atlantic is a hurricane.
Okay.
And anything that originates in the Pacific is a typhoon.
And are they all cyclones?
I stand to be corrected, but they're all cyclones, yeah.
We'll look that up.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to check that one out.
Put that in the show notes.
I was told by someone. Right. Someone in the know.
Okay.
But I personally haven't researched it yet.
Okay, so back to my parents.
Yeah,
at least what they told me is that they used to always name hurricanes after girls. And it starts with A and goes down the alphabet.
Right. There's some sequence,
Some sequence. And they rotate names. Well, they decided to start using boys' names, too, in the late 70s.
They ran out of girls' names.
I guess. Or they didn't want to be sexist or something. I don't know. Like, hurricanes are all evil and they're all girls.
Yeah, they're all girls, yeah.
I don't know. But for whatever reason, they started using girls' names or boys' names.
For anyone who wants to know, those are the bicycles coming past with rusty brakes.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. But the first boy's name of a hurricane was Hurricane Daniel.
Are you Daniel?
I'm Daniel.
So you're just Dan for short.
Yeah, just
Dan the man.
Yeah, that's the longer one.
Yeah, I've got a good old school friend, Dan. I mean, he was just Dan.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone ever called him Daniel. Only his mother when she was angry.
Yeah, my mom calls me Danny still.
Still calls you Danny, yeah.
Whatever, it's okay.
Yeah, no.
Ooh, so these bikes are squeaky. This is like a tourist area and... All these people rent these bikes that...
Yeah, this is the gig here.
They're like cars.
They got these four-wheelers.
Four-wheeler bicycles.
They got batteries in them.
And then they cheat.
And then they've... Yeah. You do get the non-battery one, but not many people opt for it.
Oh, I guess. Those things must be really heavy and really slow.
It's just cumbersome as hell.
When we saw them going up the hill...
The ladies come out here and they're like, oh, I'm not going to be damn peddling that thing around here. And the boys, you know, you see the guys, they always like... You watch them negotiating at the stand there, and the boys always opt for the pedal bike. It's like, oh, it's a great opportunity to get some exercise, and the girls just veto it.
Right.
Like battery power.
Yeah.
And then the boys drive, the girls never drive, the boys drive, and then the girls sit and play with their phones, and they cruise around the valley.
As they should be doing when they're cruising through a beautiful valley.
Beautiful valley, looking at your phone.
They should be doing that, right.
Brilliant.
One thing I've noticed since meeting you yesterday.
What's that?
I've never seen you look at a phone.
No,
maybe answering a phone call,
avoid it like the plague. Eh?
Yeah.
I think, you know, so much of my work is phone-based.
Ah, okay.
And computer-based. And Monday to Friday, like any kind of internet chats. I chat with my family with, texting. Like stay in touch with my family that way, mostly. And then the rest is just work. So...
Sure.
So I stay off of it, man. I hate them. I love having my hands free and just plug it in my bag.
Yeah, we had the good fortune of meeting you on a Saturday, I guess. So no work and therefore no phone.
Yeah.
I mean, phones are great for a lot of things, but man, you could just get addicted to them. Just looking at them all the time.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, you get that Facebook story. Oh,
yeah.
It's so insipid. It just like creeps in there and it's just... Right. You know, it's nice to, I flip through it now and then, but it was a bit of a lifeline, you know, for me at times, you know, staying up in touch with friends and so on.
Sure.
Just, yeah, it's okay.
Sure, you get all these friends coming out of the woodwork, you never seen them in 20 years, and
this
Facebook. Okay.
You know, global messaging, like you put something on one of your groups, the whole bunch get it.
Sure.
So you get this like universal updates, and so the days of... being informed by a friend about something are kind of gone.
Right.
You know, where, I heard this from somebody. It's like, no, I just saw it like, oh. Like, you know when people get married, you know when they have babies. You don't even, these are people you would, before Facebook, you wouldn't even ever have, you know, even thought about it. Even dreamed about it.
Nah.
There's mates of yours that live in Australia and New Zealand and England, and all of a sudden you're part of their lives and you're like checking out their newborn children and, you know, they're showing you what their kids did in the park on the weekend. It's like, you kind of have this social responsibility to reciprocate, you know?
Sure,
you're like, oh, maybe I should show them what we're doing.
I guess.
Yeah.
You can always just...
But then you have that whole angle of tracking and...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird one for me, like exposing your personal life on a network that's accessible by anyone on the planet.
Right. What would the CIA have given to have all that information 30 years ago, you know? And now we're just giving it away for free.
I don't think Al Capone and his mafia boys would have been on Facebook, though.
Right, they probably would have avoided it.
They would have stayed on Facebook.
I remember the movie Goodfellas at the beginning. It starts in the 50s.
They had Facebook?
No, the main character didn't even have a phone. He never would own a phone.
Yeah, call box.
He'd always go out to a payphone.
Payphone, yeah. Absolutely. It was the old classic.
Right, yeah. Nothing. No info.
And when you could feel the heat, you know, when the... He was like, yeah, warning to the payphone, and then there's a suspicious car in the background where a helicopter flies over. And
yeah.
Like,
or they'd go out in the middle of a big field and put their hands over their mouths so no one could read their lips.
Exactly.
Say a few words, whisper.
Well, I know in South Africa, I have accounts of presidential meetings where, you know, you walk through the front door. I haven't personally been to one, but these guys... When they walk through the door, they got to take their batteries out of their phones and the phones
are... Oh, I bet.
And they go and sit down and off they go.
Sure.
Discuss policy and do whatever.
Sure. I mean, I've only been to...
We won't go there. Don't get me started.
I've only been to one embassy. I was in the UK embassy in Beijing just for a little presentation.
Okay.
But I remember going in, they said, no phones. We're going to check you. You can store your phone in this locker. But there's two sets of doors, and you're not allowed to go through that first set with a phone or anything.
Yeah.
So nothing gets recorded inside.
Well, I'm glad they're a little bit more up to date. When Fukushima, was that the...
Oh, the reactor.
The reactor that after the monsoon, no, I mean after the tidal wave. What is that called? Not a tidal, a tsunami.
Right.
There was a big concern on my behalf. You know, and watching this play out and watching the footage of this reactor exploding and then learning that they are busy monitoring stuff in Dalian to see whether the wind is blowing towards Taiwan.
Yeah.
So the Chinese were like quick on to monitor.
They must have had all kinds of protocols in place to...
Well, hang on.
For this drift.
So I'm chatting to my wife and I said, listen, you know, we've got to have a plan here. So this is quite serious. I know everyone's underplaying it, but if this stuff is drifting and Japan's just up the road, man.
Sure.
So, you know, winds are winds. And I was chatting intensely to my mates and they were, you know, they got their finger on the buzzer and they were looking at the Chinese who were monitoring. And so far, Dalian hadn't picked up. Dalian would be in direct path of that wind path. And my mate was like, no, at the moment, Dalian's still good. So I thought, hey, hang on, let me phone up the South African embassy and see what my exit plan is. Because now I've got two kids, a wife, my kids are traveling on South African passports, but my wife needs a visa to get to South Africa. So if we want to get a quick out, I've got to like now go through a visa process.
Right.
Like
yeah.
Now that takes 6 days and all kinds of silly stuff. You probably want to pause because
Oh, we're getting a visitor.
We got the kids coming in.
You know those white spiders?
Okay, we'll come back.
Yeah.
We're back.
Yeah, we're back. Okay.
We were talking about Fukushima.
Fukushima.
I think an hour went by, man.
I know.
Yeah.
We've had guests and pizza and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And an osprey.
And an osprey.
Not to mention the osprey, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, I'll have to put up a picture of it.
Yeah.
Beautiful bird circling over the lake, fishing, diving.
Yeah, oh, that's magical stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and the... Giant.
And did I tell you that we might have a visitor? I told you.
You warned us.
She's just pulled into town recently. It's a new thing. She's come down from the north. It's a migratory movement. I haven't seen her for eight months or so.
Wow.
I saw her last week, 2 weeks ago. So that's why I mentioned to you. I said you might just have a little visual, you know?
Unreal, and then
True's Bob.
And then sure enough, it came right over.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You think they migrate to China?
Oh, no, they definitely do.
Or Japan?
Japan, China, Russia.
Yeah.
You know, greater breeding seasons. They breed up there. They go, you know, there's much more prolific hunting for in the summer. Obviously, they don't know about what's really going on the ground.
Sure.
But their brains are telling them their instincts are telling them that that's the place to be.
Yeah, they don't have those...
If they hang out here, they'd probably be a lot safer.
They don't have the political map, huh?
No.
I've heard the DMZ in between North and South Korea is now full on with wildlife because no human activity is allowed there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
There's some landmines left.
There's the odd one three-legged reindeer.
Right. Yeah, sure.
The three-legged moose in the DMZ zone.
Three-eyed fish, maybe.
The three-eyed fish swimming around. Donald.
So.
Donald on the tour.
Oh, also, yeah. We got some friends here. It's a great picnic area.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, we come down and look what happens, you know, and the kids sure. always make friends and puppy finds something to do. And
sure. Seems like a great place to be a kid.
And the osprey pulls in and they've got their own trees to climb. I think it's so important for kids to be able to climb a tree.
Right.
Us as kids, we had a big loquat tree at the bottom of our yard.
Loquat.
Loquat. It's a
type of fruit.
It's a fruit, yeah. It's a big tree, very big tree. They grow them here as well, but they keep them small and they keep the fruit prolific, like huge, like big and bulbous fruit. But our tree was massive. I mean, we had a tree house in the tree. And it, I mean, we never, you know, it was just there. We didn't use the fruits. Okay, like you could just pick it and eat it. But occasionally my mom would make a pie or something like that. It's that funny fruit. It's kind of like a rugby ball shape, oval. And then it's got like hair on the outside, but you can wash the hair off. Like you just like rub it on your clothes and the skin becomes very smooth. And inside there's quite a big pip.
Okay.
It's quite
a big seed.
Big seed in the center, and then you've got the fruit on the outside. It's lovely.
Huh.
Bit bland, sweet. You get a nice sweet one, that's turning. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's an interesting part of travel is discovering all the local foods and fruits especially.
It's nuts, eh? Yeah.
Different fruits grow in different parts of the world.
Brazil. I think the big one here is for me was dragon fruit.
Yeah.
You get the white and the purple with a black dot.
Are you a dragon fruit fan?
I can take the white one. The purple one's slightly like Hazel loves it, my daughter. She absolutely loves the purple one. For me it's fragrant, man. It's like eating perfume. It's like getting a really expensive bottle of perfume and then trying to eat it. It's a strange sensation. It's like something I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
My senses say no.
Right.
But she gets involved.
Yeah.
But the big problem there is you eat the purple one, a day later you think, you know, you've got to go see the doctor because you're peeing purple, you're pooing purple.
Oh, it's like
beets. Yeah, and if you don't think, you panic. You're like, oh my goodness.
Right.
What the hell is that? You know, and you're like, and then you're like, oh, it's the dragon fruit.
Gets you every time.
Whew, whoo, thanks.
Yeah, I had never even seen a dragon fruit until I moved to China.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't
know.
Yeah,
it's not big, yeah.
No.
Me too. Same thing, yeah.
I don't think it would fit well with the American palate. I mean, with globalization, we've got fruit from everywhere, but...
You know it grows on a cactus.
What's that? What?
A cacti. It's a big, like, yeah, you'll see them all along the valley.
We've
seen
a lot of dragon fruit farms.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, no, it's here. This is the zone, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
And then you have another one called Shakya. The English name is custard apple.
Huh.
You've got to eat one. It is so delicious. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, gorgeous. It's this funny thing. It looks like a brain. It's a fruit that's got this like lumpy, brainy kind of texture on the outside, and it's got this funny, succulent skin on the outside, and it's maybe as big as a grapefruit. Maybe two grapefruits. And then if you find a soft one, that's ready. A hard one you can't eat. Soft one, you cut it open, and then you have these little seeds inside that are covered in fruit or meat, fruit meat. And then you basically pull it out and you suck on it. You pull off the meat and then the seed, basically the meat disappears down into your throat. You eat it, you swallow it, and then the seed is left. So that's the way to process it. It's very difficult to pull the seed out. You know, you got to kind of use your mouth to do that.
Huh.
So you put like two or three in and you like rumble them around and out come three very perfect little black seeds. And you just have this amazing sensation. They're quite expensive, man.
Oh, really?
It's a bit of a delicacy, because it's a plant that gets attacked by flies and stuff pretty quickly. Yeah. So,
sounds like a medium effort plant.
I don't like fruit
if it takes a long time, you know.
The farmer's got to go and like individually like wrap each one to stop the fruit flies getting in there and laying eggs and animals laying eggs in there, because it's so delicious and the sugars are quite heavy on it.
Is that why they wrap bananas too? They wrap bananas. Is that why?
Yeah, they do for it fruit, here. They do flies? It here. Yeah, for flies and I don't know.
I've always wondered that, if that's part of the, like, helps them grow better, or if it's to keep animals.
I think it's just to get the harvest without the rot. Because as soon as that animal insect gets in there, you know, it's a throwaway.
It's all done.
Yeah, you gotta toss it. So
It's been fun though. Coming
Labor
here.
Of love.
Sure.
You gotta be. The farmers are running out, man. There's like all the youth, they go to the city, the big lights, they love computers and...
Same story everywhere you go.
Yeah, and the old guys here are sitting here, they're all complaining, beefing, you know. My old man, he sits on the farmer's board and, you know, and he always, if you get him on a good day and you ask him what the hell's going on, he's like, he moans about the fact that there's just no one here. No one wants to work. No one's into physical labor. No one's into standing in the sunshine growing fruit and... But there's being like this loop, you know, like you now get Taiwanese kids finishing college and then taking a plane to Australia and picking blueberries for a year.
Yeah, suddenly it's hip again.
Yeah, all of a sudden. Like,
they make it so easy in Australia. Yeah. They've got a good plan.
And they pay you well. They pay you well.
Pay you well. Yeah. I think you have to be under 30 to do it. You can go there for a year.
I met a guy who runs an operation. He's in charge of a operation. He's like, the Taiwanese are the best. Mm. He's like, he gets them from all over. Japan, China, Philippines, Thailand. So he's got this whole intake. He's an Australian married to a Taiwanese girl. And you know, I had a good chat with him. And he was like, the Taiwanese are the cream of the crop. It's like, when they pitch up, they always have a big party at the beginning just to like get everyone introduced, and there's a lot of camping going on. When they go onto the farms, there's no accommodation.
Okay.
So they pitch tents, and he's got a caravan that he pulls with a pickup, and him and his missus run the show. This is their business, you know?
Yeah.
They get subcontracted by the farms to hire a group of youngsters to come and pick.
There you go.
And he's like, man, Taiwanese kids. Beautiful. He said, I'll take a Taiwanese kid over anything else.
Mm. Getting some wind here, so I'm facing away from the wind.
I think this little feathery stuff you got on your mic should probably keep us clean.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get a strong enough wind, it still picks it up. Anyway, I saw this video once a while back.
I still want to tell you about Fukushima.
Fukushima.
We'll go back to Fukushima.
Anyway, we keep forgetting about Fukushima.
No, you go ahead. I'll okay. Fukushima you later.
Okay.
You later. Fukushima you later.
Fuck it to me. I always used to say sake to me when I was in Japan for sake. Sake to me. That's right. Katie hates it. She hates it.
Could be interpreted another way, but yeah.
Right. So I saw this video of this guy who had been traveling for like 3 or 4 years, and he said people always ask him, how do you pay for it? And he said, well,
pay for what?
For travel.
For Fukushima.
We're not there yet.
Not that. Okay. I thought you were going into the how do you pay for that? Yeah.
Oh, that he
well,
might.
Well, in cash, baby.
Yeah. He might be into that too. Who knows?
So how do you pay for the travels?
Okay. The travels.
How do you keep the show on the road?
And he said he did one of these Australian things, but he said he went to Australia for 2 weeks, and his job was a construction worker, and since he was new, they just made him hold up a stop sign. So he stood
That's
in the
a
road.
Great fucking job, man.
Held up a stop sign and for 2 weeks, and that took care of him for like 2 years of travel.
Perfect.
Just the money he made from that.
Better than a bricklayer.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. He just left Australia right away, got out of that expensive country, went somewhere cheap.
Yeah, and held up a sign.
Held up a sign.
That's it, man.
That's it.
People pay you to hold up a piece of wood with a message on it. It's that simple. That's what life is all about.
Doesn't get any better.
Exactly.
And you can listen to podcasts.
And as long as you've got earphones, you're in business.
Right. So the sign now, I think, is pointing to Fukushima. So tell us about what was going on there.
Well, we were there, we were chatting, and I was looking for a contingency plan to get the hell out of this country. I mean, people were not taking it seriously, and I was definitely taking it seriously. And people in the know give you advice, and, you know, nuclear... They've underplayed the nuclear exposure of Fukushima so badly. I mean, we have no idea how bad it is, and it's terrible. And, of course, they've underplayed it. So, anyway, I was looking for this escape plan, and just in case the winds turned. And so I phoned up the South African embassy, because it's a liaison office. It's not an embassy. We're not allowed to have an embassy due to China's political oppression.
Yeah, political situation.
Gameplay.
Yeah.
So I phoned up the old liaison office and I said, listen, guys, this is the situation. My wife's on a Taiwanese passport. My two kids, they're fine. They've got South African passports, so we can jump on a plane in 2 seconds. But, you know, I'm not leaving my missus behind. So what is your plan for the, you know, evacuation of South African citizens out of Taiwan should the nuclear disaster arrive and like blow across us and start dropping radiation across us? And the guy on the other end of the phone is a classic. He said, what tsunami, sir? He didn't even know there was a tsunami. He didn't even know it happened. He missed the entire Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I phoned him on the Monday. I know it happened on a Friday because it was Super Rugby, and I love Super Rugby, and they start their games on a Friday. And they start them on a Friday in New Zealand and Australia. And occasionally my work gives me the opportunity to turn on the screen and just catch a game while I'm working.
Okay.
Just the afternoon game. The Aussie Kiwi games kicks off at about 3 on a Friday afternoon. So, and I turned on my big screen and I was like, oh my goodness. And it was actually live footage of that tsunami, like just coming, like literally at that time, like live feed, the water just flowing into Japan, Fukushima.
Right.
And they had helicopters and they were just saying like, warning, warning, warning. There was just like this red line running, the ticker tape running at the bottom. It was massive. And then, I mean, and then on like Saturday, Sunday, you were watching the plant exploding. Like, saw this like, poof. You're just like, what? Right. And then, you know, nuclear fallout, evacuation zone, 150 kilometers around the town or something like that, 150 kilos. Everyone was like, they're still doing documentaries now, like where you can, this guy's going into Fukushima, going to check out what was left behind. And you can go watch it on BBC or whatever, you know. Huh. No one took it seriously.
It's
a joke. Bloody stuff's washing into the ocean, bleeding into our marine life, you know, and everyone's eating fish out of the sea.
Right.
The Japanese can't stop the sushi, you know.
Yeah,
it's just like, come on.
Don't want to put a damper on that.
No.
It's a big industry.
Yeah, don't stop the money. Huh. Keep eating that tuna. It's good for you.
If anyone should be like knowledgeable and worried about nuclear radiation, it's the Japanese. It's
exactly. I mean,
even they're in denial, huh?
They after Hiroshima and what was the other one?
Nagasaki. Yeah.
They had terms for people passing away, family members getting tumors, and you know that was par for the course. It was almost like oh well, she died of cancer. Oh well. You know, that must have been fallout from the old Nagasaki thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was part and part of losing a loved one.
We were just in Hiroshima. Last month. Yeah.
Oh, really?
We went to where the bomb hit. It was it's just so sad.
Is there still remnants? Is there still
It destroyed the whole city, but it
Yeah,
it,
look.
Well, photos. One thing is it blew up. I didn't realize this. It blew up I forget how high, but a few hundred meters above the city is where it exploded. It didn't actually land.
Oh, it didn't hit?
No.
Oh.
No, so they don't have a epicenter, what they would call it. They call it a hypocenter.
Is it a hypo?
Is what the term is, I guess, when it explodes in the air.
The end zone.
yeah, the end zone. What do they call it? Little Boy was the name of the bomb.
It was Little Boy, yes.
Right.
That one.
From the Enola Gay.
Enola Gay.
Wow. Terrible. But there was one building that just because of the way the waves came out of the bomb, that it survived. But severely damaged, but they call it the dome, the nuclear bomb dome or something. Now.
Okay.
And it's they just left it up.
They left it as a memorial in a way.
Yeah, a lot of people wanted them to destroy it because they just
coming in. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hit the road. it just stopped here. I come here in the mornings, and occasionally the falcon is busy taking out a bird, and you witness it here on the killing plains. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Disturb the bird. So I wanted to ask you, when you were in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence of the bomb?
Like
in terms of like they left it as a symbol, something to remember.
Oh, there's a huge
the ground
memorial.
Zero kind
yeah,
of memorial.
Right, pretty much right where it hit. So they were aiming for this bridge that's shaped like a T.
Oh, they were.
Right. That was the target.
You kind of just want to drop a nuclear bomb anywhere.
Yeah, you
doesn't
think
really
it's
matter,
like
it?
Horseshoes and hand grenades, right?
Just get it over there.
Right.
Let it go when you're somewhere near.
Well, here's the other thing. God, there's all this crazy stuff I learned. There were like 100 different cities in Japan being targeted as potential targets.
As potential, okay.
And they wanted medium-sized cities, and they wanted certain geographical features around the city to contain it or to kill as many people as possible. I'm not sure which, but they scouted out all these cities.
Yeah, I wonder what the boardroom meeting was all about.
Yeah,
like,
the topography had to be just right. Hiroshima has these mountains behind it, so the bomb then was quite small, actually, by modern standards. It was only like 10 kilotons or something of TNT, and the big ones, the what do you call it? Not A-bombs, but
the nuclear.
Yeah, that's, well, this is nuclear, but the
Donald always says, nuclear and other things, other bad things.
Other, you know, yeah, very bad.
We're very, very,
very
bad.
Bad.
Like
tremendous.
Yeah, you're tremendous.
The hydrogen bombs, those ones are in the megatons. This one's all like kilotons. Anyhow, so the American forces were bombing all.
Wasn't it a hydrogen bomb? No, what was it?
Not yet.
It was a
nuclear bomb.
It was a nuclear bomb, but it was a hydrogen bomb.
No,
it was a hydrogen.
Hydrogen came later. This is the A bomb, atomic bomb.
This was an atomic bomb. What was the foundation? What was the back?
Atomic bomb uses
breaks a fission. Yes, nuclear fission.
It divides the atom.
Yes.
The H bomb
releases the energy. Yeah.
Of the cell.
Of the atom.
Right.
Yes.
All that store. H equals E equals MC squared. That's it. Whatever.
No, good.
Einstein stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The H-bomb starts just as a catalyst, uses the A-bomb.
Oh, and then it triggers.
It gets the real reaction going. And
what are we dealing with now?
Then it fuses atoms together.
Like, what the hell do we have now? Oh, that fuses.
Who knows?
I mean, what are we doing now? I mean,
I don't know. There's this weapon.
Whatever it is, it's just wrong. It's just like, why are we playing in this field?
There's all these American diplomats from Cuba that got really sick from some sort of sonic weapon.
Oh.
They released, because these guys are all in the embassy. And the Cubans can't really do much from outside, but they played some sort of noise in exactly the right frequency. And
Nickelback.
That must be it. That must have been their key.
Nickelback, loud and proud. That'll make you sick.
I guess I never thought of that. Yeah. But all these people are getting sick from it. And they're pretty sure it's a sonic weapon that we don't know what the hell it is. Well,
I can believe it.
At least it's not public.
And wave-wise...
Right. Imagine dispersing a crowd of protesters with something like that.
Boom.
Yeah.
Sonic boom.
Yeah, but it doesn't physically hurt them. And then there's plausible deniability.
And they just get dizzy.
They're like, I don't feel like being here anymore. I'm going to go away.
It's like the liquid in the ear starts like bubbling and you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm not feeling the good anymore.
Well, I guess I like the government now.
They could use it in a positive way as well, you know. Release the endorphins and make everyone placid and happy.
Hey, why not? Yeah. Just drop some marijuana on the cities and everyone will be chill.
Yeah, well, put it in the water system. That's what I say.
Yeah, right. Wow, what were we just talking about? The Hiroshima. We should talk about that a little bit. They had all these videos.
Oh, you went to the museum or what?
Yeah, there's a museum. Oh, so they were trying to hit the T bridge. Yeah. They were only like 100 meters off, though. It was crazy. Really
well,
close.
Well done, guys. Yeah.
Very well placed.
Didn't he kill himself, the pilot?
Did he? I don't know.
Yeah, he committed suicide. He didn't know.
He just felt guilty, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, he murdered how many people?
Right? Yeah, hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands and the aftermath thereof.
Oh,
so apparently he offed himself.
Yeah, can't blame him there.
I forget the pilot's name, but it's searchable.
Remember the plane, the
Nolagay.
Such a funny name.
What was, but then Nagasaki was a different plane, obviously. And who was that? Like it's almost like, the whole thing was different, but no one really tends to focus on this. Was that the second bombing?
That's the second one.
Was it the second?
We built three nukes, and only
built
three.
Built in America, tested in Japan.
No, the first one they tested in the desert in the U.S.
Yeah.
Unpopulated.
Mexico.
They're like, will this shit work? It's brand new. We don't know. We've been working on it for 5 years. It's Manhattan Project. Let's test it. So they did it. They're like, yeah, it works. All right.
Put on your sunglasses kind of thing.
Right. And then they launched one on Hiroshima and then said, okay, surrender. Come on.
They didn't.
No. Nah. And then the Russians joined. I didn't realize the Russians weren't, they hadn't declared war against Japan. And after the first bomb, they're like, oh yeah, I see where this is going. I'm going to join the Allies against Japan. Germany had already surrendered by that point.
Yeah, and it was the last.
It was only like 3 days in
the between. The Americans kind of had to continue the Pacific War.
Yeah.
I mean, victory Europe was done.
That had been all achieved already.
11-11, I think. Well, when did that happen? Post May, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Hitler, the exact
Hitler snuffed himself.
Right.
And that was pretty much done.
That was it, yeah. That was middle of 45, and then by the end.
Now, my grandfather flew in the war. He was a pilot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Scottish?
Dutch. Dutch, but South African.
Oh, okay.
He was literally born in South Africa. He was conceived in Holland and born in South Africa. And then as a young man, joined the British Air Force, because South Africa was under British control in those days.
Right. So they were still using you guys, huh?
Yeah. I mean,
I remember going to Australia and learning about Gallipoli in the First World War.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of South Africans in Gallipoli.
Oh, South Africans too.
Australians, South Africans.
The British used you guys like little bitches and just got you all killed.
Yeah. We did
for
our
no
share.
Reason.
No, absolutely.
No point at all to it.
I did a history project once where I had to interview a chap. Well, I just chose. It was something I wanted to do. And one of my mom's friends, he served as a medic in Gallipoli.
Oh.
So I had to sit down and did a podcast with him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was only about 14, I think, 14 years old or something, and I had a tape recorder. And
they had podcasts.
Yeah. My project was taking in a tape deck and sitting down with this guy around the kitchen table and pushed record and we talked. I got an A. I got the history prize that year for doing the work. Because, I mean, interviewing a 75-year-old man those days who'd been in the war.
Yeah, it's great you did that.
Brilliant. Yeah,
I remember. I remember talking to my grandma about it for a project too when I was in high school about the more about the Great Depression.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah. She grew up during that.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I did that.
Of course, and we've got the old grandmother here, 96.
Oh, she's been through it all.
She talks about Japanese occupation and the work, and these guys used to come and fly over here with jets and. Well, they didn't have jets. They had planes, and they used to empty out their guns into the rice fields here, just to show dominance. And you know,
the Japanese
just before they landed at the port, you know, up in Taidong, which is about 40 k's that way. So, on their way back to the Air Force base, they'd empty their guns into the rice paddies here, just to make sure that everyone knew, you know, don't you think about getting smart, you know?
Right.
So, the poor old lady, she because she grew up under Japanese oppression here.
Yeah.
Part of building this highway, the great crossing here, and then of course the one in Hualien. I don't know if you got to the museum though. Did you get to the Hualien Museum?
No, unfortunately, riding bikes, you know, it's just hard
to
carve out too much time.
It's not too far up.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a community center, and you get to see all the photos. There's a lot of footage of old photos of them building and how many people died. Local labor, the dynamite blasting. And
We should have gone.
Bridge over River Kwai.
We went to Hualien for about an hour. Oh, Katie's not going to want me to say this, but I'll say it anyway.
Mm.
We were on the train because we skipped the section north of there because it's supposed to be just really bad for biking, just tunnels and clogged up roads. So we skipped a small section.
Yeah.
Took the train. She left her iPad on the train.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we found out, we didn't realize for 2 days because she didn't need it for a couple of days.
She didn't trigger,
And we're like, well, okay, we figured out where she had left it, went trace back in time. It's a long shot, but maybe someone turned it in. Who knows? So I made some calls, and sure enough, it was sitting there in the train station in Hualien.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so we went.
Taiwan, brother.
Yeah. Very safe country.
What a beautiful place.
Yeah, good people here. So we got it back. And then that was it. That's our experience in Hualien. No museums.
Taiwan, I mean, I'm South African, so I still suffer from paranoia of just being robbed on any occasion.
Sure.
So, I'll never forget when I first got here, I had my, we used to call it a moon bag. It's basically just a bag that you strap around with a pouch in the front.
Fanny pack.
A fanny pack.
Americans would call it.
You call it a fanny pack.
You probably have a different word for fanny.
I had a moon bag. Yeah, no, we're not allowed to say fanny pack.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I pulled in. I was teaching first time around, and I had my moon bag, and I had my pass. I religiously kept my passport and my wallet and my traveler's checks, and I was just like this new traveler. And I got here as a South African, and got into the teacher's staff room, and there was a Canadian guy, there was an American guy, and now I was a South African guy, and then I had to go in and teach. I had to go and spend time, and I had to leave the teacher's room, and didn't want to go in with this big moon bag, and I was like, so I went up to the headmistress at the time, and she was like, well, just put it in the cubicle. There's your box there. Just put it in there. And I was like, no, but what if someone steals it?
Sure.
She was like, you're in Taiwan. Just put your stuff there. It'll be fine. I promise you. And I was like, so skeptical. I was just like, it's everything. It's my whole life. If that bag goes missing, I'm done.
Yeah.
Me.
That's important.
That's me back at the liaison office begging for a passport. And
a giant headache.
What a pain in the ass, yeah. But I went ahead and I've slowly grown accustomed. And now when I go back to South Africa, I kind of carry the same policy that I practice here because I've lived here longer. So it's kind of like, and my parents and my sisters and stuff, they're just like, what, are you crazy? You just like left the window open, the doors open, you left the keys in the car, and your bag's like just lying there on the passenger seat.
Wow, you're doing that in South Africa.
I'm just doing this like big karma thing, like, oh, well, if they're going to steal my bag, they're going to steal my bag, it's like, it's up to them.
Right.
They're like, are you mental? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, well, I come from Taiwan, nothing ever happens. So.
It's a bit dangerous going home in that way because you carry your habits that you picked up from abroad.
Yeah, no, I'm naive back home.
You're back to square one.
Back to square one, start all over. And, in the middle of the night, the dogs get, itsy and they start running around, they start barking. We let them out, they go looking. And then we have movements and then, there's people in the yard and there's robberies, there's hijacks, there's guns in your face. I mean, my dad is part of the community. He gets all the, he handles all the updates for the community security. And we get to see the record. And it's it's hectic.
Sure.
Like, what the hell? It was like, that's what's going on while you're sleeping, you know? People are getting robbed. People are getting guns stuck in their faces. Pistol whipped. You know, cars taken in the middle of the night. Dogs poisoned. It's just insane.
Awful.
Yeah.
Man, what kind of life is that?
Nah.
The stress that that must put on you to have to always worry about that stuff.
I go back 2 months a year, you know, and I stay. And after I'm there for 2 months, I'm just like, nah. I'm taking my kids back to Taiwan, you know.
It's like, sure.
I don't want to have them to grow up like this. Electric fences, big ass hunting dogs, like guns in the safe, all that kind of stuff. Just trying to survive. It's just stupid.
Right.
It's just stupid.
Yeah. This has to be one of the safest parts of the world, though.
Mm.
Not just Taiwan, but Japan is very safe. South Korea.
Yeah, but they do. Very safe. There is an angle on that, and that's the fallout, the radiation, pollution, that growth period of Taiwan went through a massive growth period where environmental protection just didn't exist.
Oh, okay.
And China's going through it now.
Yeah.
Mainland. Yeah. I mean, they're beefing it up now. Now, only now, they're beefing it up. I've been to plants in China where there's no baghouse.
What's a baghouse?
A baghouse is a filtration system that sits over a furnace.
Oh.
And any emission that comes off of the furnace is sucked through a vacuum into a baghouse and then filtered and collected.
And this would be standard in the Western world?
Europe, I mean, geez, you wouldn't be able to operate without a baghouse.
Okay.
And they're very, very, very expensive. It's the most expensive part of a plant.
Well, I guess that's why they don't have
it. That's why they don't have it. Yeah, they want to make money. And you go there and, you know, I'm doing a site inspection. I was like, oh, well, where's your baghouse? And the manager's like, well, we don't have a baghouse. I was like, what? It's like, yeah, we don't have a baghouse.
So the air in this factory is just horribly
polluted? No, I mean, they don't care. It depends which way you live, on downwind or upwind. Yeah, okay. And I mean, they're producing chrome 6. It's a highly toxic, soluble metal. It's born from chrome, the smelting of chrome. It basically is so small that it's a isotope of chrome. And it's called chrome 6. And it can find its way into the atmosphere. And it's straight out of a smelting plant, of course. It goes straight up into the air, becomes part of the rain system, part of the, you know, in the rains and back into the rivers, and it's actually a metal that is so small, it's soluble, and this is the fundamental issue with pollution is that when toxins become soluble, when they can actually dissolve in water, and that's when they can start being absorbed by plants. So when it rains on a field, the field then will take up the water and that toxin will go into the plant and actually become part of the plant. And then you consume the plant.
Yeah.
And that toxin still exists. You eat it, it goes into your stomach, it gets absorbed through your stomach lining into your blood system. Now you're carrying chrome 6. And that's when you get cancer. It was the famous John Travolta, Julia Roberts, American movie.
Ooh, I don't
when
know this
they
one.
First, it was, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was a law, it was a famous, it's a true story, the case. It was a, I can't remember the name, but it was.
You know,
it was a big eye-opener.
The lawyer case.
The lawyer case, and that was Chrome 6. That was a Chrome 6 issue. Where they were dumping, because it's expensive to clean up chrome 6.
Yeah, and the real person won a, was it Nobel Peace Prize or won some big award?
For what?
For exposing all this.
The real. Yeah, Julia, maybe.
The character Julia Roberts played. God, I'm so terrible.
Brockovich or something.
Yeah, that's
something,
it, Brockovich.
Brockovich something, yeah.
Right.
I don't know about the prizes and stuff, but.
Boy.
The fact is, it's just rife in Asia. I mean, that was what was happening in the States so long ago.
Sure.
and it was exposed. And of course, no one wanted to deal with it. But now, I mean, Asia's been all kinds of leather tanning industry, aluminium coatings, chrome coatings. So any kind of chroming. You see any kind of anything that's looking fancy pantsy, chrome wheels, chrome tow hitches.
You got your shiny car.
Any shiny shinies.
Yeah.
It's gone through a process where chrome 6 is definitely there. So the only way to clean this up is through what's called precipitation. They concentrate it, they use certain chemicals to bring it to concentrate it into this very high PPM, and then they basically put it in a barrel and take it to a secure site, and
it's like toxic waste.
It's toxic waste. It's as bad as nuclear waste.
Whoa!
But it costs a damn fortune.
Disposal. Oh, we got a boat on the river here.
Yeah, yeah. That's John. That's John's dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he must be back. I told you.
Takes about 10 seconds to get across this lake.
Yeah. The pond.
Yeah, the pond.
On Golden Pond.
Right, right. Oh, so now you got me thinking twice about moving back to China potentially. It's a really good life in so many ways, but
I don't know, pollution. the food standards, come on, it's just like what's happening in those factories? What's happening in those factories?
That's right, and the water, and
yeah,
I don't know. So some of Katie's the parents of her students are getting into organics and like greenhouse growing everything.
Sure,
all they'll eat.
It's huge now, yeah.
Very big within the wealthier population, because the food does cost quite a bit more. Vegetables especially are quite cheap in China.
Sure.
But God, you just don't know what you're getting, I guess.
Night soil, man.
Night soil?
Night soil is basically like human excrement, right?
That's what I was afraid you're
gonna
say.
That's where you get hepatitis and you start...
Sure.
And the hepatitis is big on the island, yeah. I mean, that's from years past. So now things are better, but hepatitis, it's night soil. Guys just going out and dumping sewage on their vegetables.
God.
And if it's not washed properly.
Right. So
off you go.
Did you follow that story of that North Korean defector guy recently?
No.
This guy he's in charge of guarding the border.
Yeah. I saw him in a van. I saw that. That's all I saw.
And I think they shot down the van or something, and he got out.
Did he get across?
Yeah,
and he got bullets. He got taken.
He got shot like 6 times.
Yes, he's in hospital. Yes.
Fell down, right on the other side of the border. He just like tapped it, like made it, and then he just passed out. And these South Korean soldiers crawled to him, hoping they wouldn't get shot. Luckily, they didn't.
Snipers.
Sure. Yeah. Start a war right there. Dragged the guy to safety in the South Korean side, and the surgeon operated on him. He had, I think, 6 bullets in him. Very nearly died.
I heard that, yeah.
As the surgeon was operating, one of the bullets tore through his guts. And the surgeon was fixing his guts up and pulled out a 10-inch worm.
Oh, I read about that.
And then he pulled out another one. And he's like, and they said this is very common because of night soil. Now I remember where I know that from.
Yeah.
It comes from humans shitting on crops, basically, and then the food doesn't get cooked properly.
Yeah, and they, you know.
But he never
Don't eat the salad, don't eat the ice.
It's the last thing the surgeon expected to see, parasites.
Parasites in our defector.
Right. But the
It's a bit of a sensationalist thing. I'm not sure how true it is but it's pretty cool.
This surgeon is super famous now in South Korea.
Surely.
You can't even go outside.
Surely.
And he's trying to protect the South Koreans, saying like, look, you don't want to traumatize the poor kid. And he's got to have all kinds of knowledge though that he could share, you know, like military secrets.
Yeah. Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. Rocket Man's heart of action.
Oh, that poor country. My goodness.
Right.
Yeah, North Korea.
Yeah, you know, Katie and I went there.
Did you actually get in?
Yeah,
you
a
went?
Couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
Almost 2 years ago now.
As American citizens. That's quite bold.
Our own government now is not allowing us to go anymore.
Okay.
But at the time, it was still okay.
Right.
If anyone's listening, it was okay.
What did you, how long did you spend?
It was like a week or 6 days maybe.
In
Pyongyang.
In
mostly.
Pyongyang.
Yeah, we flew there from Beijing. It was wild time.
I'm sure Pyongyang's quite normal. Yeah. I mean, it's the icon city, and they probably buffed it all up. And
that's right. Yeah. It's where the elites get to live.
Yeah.
There's maybe 5% of the population lives there or something. They're the most industrialized, most modern city. But you say it's quite normal. I think I spent about half of my time going, oh yeah, this looks like a normal country. Yeah, this is pretty normal. And then the other half going, no, it's not normal. This is North Korea.
What did you stay in, hotels? Are they such things?
There's a hotel. There's a couple, but pretty much everybody who visits North Korea stays in the same place in Pyongyang.
Oh, really? As a foreigner?
As a foreigner.
You have to kind of be shuffled off there.
Yeah, you do. So it's this giant hotel.
Lots of
like
cameras.
45 stories tall everywhere. Like 45 story hotel.
Oh, this dog is
on an island.
A dead fish.
Oh, we've got our little
she
puppy.
She stinks. She's going to have to go for a bath.
Ugh. All right, puppy, settle down.
You're unwelcome.
So this hotel is on an island.
Oh, well, even
it's
better.
It's this huge skyscraper. I've never seen such a big hotel.
Put the foreigners over there, kind of thing.
And I think there were maybe a couple Chinese groups and then us. And so there's maybe like 40 or 50 total tourists in the whole country. And they're all in this hotel. And the first 30 floors of the hotel, completely empty. Wow. Lights out, and it was winter, and luckily we had heat because most of the buildings we went in didn't have any heat, middle of the winter. And going up the elevator, every now and then the elevator would just open on like floor 15 or some random floor, and it would just be darkness, just pitch black and no heat. And so a wave of cold air would just blow right into the elevator. Like, anyone want
it's
to get out
like
here?
A breath of a ghost, you know?
Yeah, blowing terrifying. On you, yeah. Absolutely
the
terrifying.
The regime, reminding you.
Right. we're just constantly thinking we were being listened to in the hotel. I don't know. Who knows?
Was there any oddity going in? Like, did you feel like any kind of like monitoring anything? Like, was there when you hit the airport?
Well,
lots of screening and
no such.
Did you have to get a visa?
Yeah, we had to get a visa. But you know what? We didn't even have to turn in our passport to the embassy or anything. We just applied and got a
online
piece.
Or what?
Yeah, pretty much. We called up the local tour agency. They took care of it all. We gave them our info, sent in
our
money.
We wanted to go to North Korea. That's what we
wanted
to do.
Yeah, they run trips there.
All right,
yeah. And so we got our visa. Was just a piece of paper. They don't put it in your passport.
Right.
A few countries do this, more of the rogue nations.
Yeah.
So they, I gave them my visa, I gave them my passport.
Stamp?
But
long did you get? A week?
I think it's just for the tour. So you got a visa for
The duration.
For the duration of the tour.
Right.
It's tightly controlled. But you know how you always have to fill in a piece of paper for immigration? Like, do you have any of the following things? Do you have any fruits or animals with you? This thing.
Do you have an infectious disease?
Do you have parasites in your guts?
Yes, I do, in fact.
If not, you're not allowed.
Yeah. Just like your soldiers do, I do too.
Right. Well, I soon will.
Is tapeworm a problem?
Among the people, not among us. Hello, Miha. Got an admirer taking pictures of us with her phone.
She's taking a picture of our picnic.
Oh, and showing us how she's
taking
a picture
at that.
Of us.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. I think she works for North Korea.
I think
she's
so.
A spy.
Yeah. Every time you start talking, a spy comes up. Yeah. So this piece of paper, it asks those normal questions, but then it said, please list every single item that you're carrying.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, three pairs of underwear.
Underpants.
Socks.
I think there's a toothbrush. I'm not sure. There might be floss.
Yeah. I brought in one book, and I made sure it had nothing to do with North Korea.
Oh.
Just for something to read. I didn't bring any electronics in except my camera. I knew that was
allowed. What kind of book could have caused a bit of a rumpus there? I mean,
any book. They say
Rocket Man.
Yeah, Rocket Man. The interview. They said don't bring a copy of The Interview. That's the movie about North.
Of course.
Making fun of Rocket Man.
Yeah. They're
not allowed.
Not of course. Yeah.
Katie was sitting next to me on the plane.
Watching.
And she just thumbed.
Streaming it.
She was thumbing through the book that she had brought in. Right away, this just always happens. You open a book and the worst thing comes up, and the page that you open it to. It said North Korea right in the middle of the book. North Korea. Like, what? How did I miss this? One of the characters had gone there. But still, it was no big deal.
What airline did you take?
Koryo Airlines, it's called.
It's part of the North Korean airline.
Oh,
okay. And they pick you up in their plane.
In Beijing.
You get picked up in a Korean plane.
God, I was expecting it to be this crazy, like, weird wing of the airport for North Korea flights, but it's just like, it's just like, this flight's going to, like, Helsinki, and this one's going to Melbourne, and then the next gate, this one's going to Pyongyang. Yeah.
I'm sure they're all sweet and cute.
Unbelievable. Yeah. The first thing I remember, though, like, where it became real, it's like getting on the plane, all of a sudden everyone's wearing the pin, the double pin.
With the two
dead leaders. Every person in North Korea has
Daddy
to wear this pin.
Daddy and granddaddy. And the granddaddy.
Yeah, Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il.
You have to.
Everyone.
Must wear the pin.
Who
is not wearing the ribbon?
Yeah. And everyone has to have the pictures of the two leaders in their house, and they have to clean them every day.
They're required to.
Yeah. And every building you go in has a picture of the leaders. It's very cult-like.
Jeez, I wouldn't be able to get my head around that one.
Oh, that's crazy, man.
Did you have one in your hotel? In your room, I guess.
Oh, the picture? Yeah. Not in our room, no.
You weren't forced.
You clean.
You polish.
For visitors?
This is your cloth. You're like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is to clean the pictures in your room. We're like, what are you talking about?
Every day you must bow to the leaders.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to seem pretty normal to the foreigners. So they didn't have any of that stuff in the hotel. It seemed more just like a normal hotel.
Did Katie wear her big brother tracksuit?
Right. I think she left that one at home.
She left that one strategically.
Yeah. But man, the next thing I remember on the plane is I smelled cigarette smoke.
Oh.
Like, these people are smoking on an airplane.
Good
like,
old 70s, man. Yeah. The Concorde.
Right back to it.
Yeah.
And this airline is famous for giving you a green cheeseburger when you fly there.
It's green.
Yeah. But
why is it
we
green?
Didn't get one. I was so mad.
Oh.
I wanted the green cheeseburger.
Damn, yeah. I want a green cheeseburger as well.
They gave us some other nasty processed food, but I wanted my green cheeseburger.
Korean airline food.
Yeah. That's Koryo.
Koryo airline
food. Good old Koryo Airlines.
Green hamburger.
Yeah.
What's the story behind that? Is it made out of fungus or something?
No idea, but it's iconic.
Sporangiophores.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah, what a trip, man.
That's
interesting. Yeah. Good on you. You didn't run naked through Pyongyang.
Nah. You know, we're extremely polite.
I have a friend who ran across Tiananmen Square naked.
Really? Didn't get arrested or shot down?
They did. No, yeah. They got taken. Yeah, they spent a night in prison, apparently.
Yeah, well, sure you would get...
But this was a long time ago as well. Like, things are a lot...
Before 89?
I don't know. I'll have to check up. But,
yeah.
But he talks proudly of doing this.
Oh, there's tight security in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
It was a good day trip.
Right.
I enjoyed it.
There's plainclothes policemen everywhere.
Yeah,
there's
fire
extinguishers everywhere in case you want to do any extracurricular activity. Yeah, right. Yeah, you gotta behave yourself there.
We're getting a wood fire going. We've been talking about all kinds of things.
All sorts of nonsense coming up in today's conversation.
Goodness, yes.
We're gonna be grilling out tonight on this grill. You seem to be passionate about grilling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a grill master. Fancy myself a
I
little
can tell.
Bit. Yeah, but, you know, I've let it go, but I love the culture of making a fire, and I think
something that's been lost over time.
Yeah, and
maybe
the kids love it. So
sure,
and the food tastes so much better. So
I think there's something to that our ancestors used to sit around the campfire.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Watch that fire, and they cook their food on it. And they tell stories.
What a way to share the evening, you know?
Sure,
you know.
Look up at the stars.
Yeah.
Wonder what's out there.
Exactly.
It's been going on since time immemorial.
From the get-go.
Yeah.
Days old, yeah. So, and there's nothing better than a wood fire as well. I mean, the charcoal fire, it's good to cook on, but a wood fire just does it for me, you know?
Sure.
So I've been aiming towards the plum wood up in the forests here, We've got a lot of like dead plum wood falling off the trees here, the old orchards from 100 years ago. So there's plenty of plum wood. Mm. And it's kind of a burner. It's okay, but the bark is the problem. Breaking into the bark. I've had large pieces of plum wood have literally burnt for like 45 minutes, 3/4 of an hour,
sure,
on the fire, and they have not penetrated the bark. It's that, wow, it's that aggressive. They're that protective.
Wow.
It's such, wow, a resilient tree. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic wood.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough baby, you know?
How much of it have you got up there?
Well,
got
there's...
enough to last a few years?
There's plenty, but... You know, there's orchards all over the top over there, but you can't really do much. These old guys
are protective.
They're very protective of their resource, and
fair enough.
I mean, what are they gonna do? I don't know. I ask the guy down here. I call him Susu, uncle. So he's a schoolmate of my father-in-law. So he went to school with my old man. And yeah, he goes up. He's still out on the field. He's still like working the field, you know, and that's what he does. He goes out in his little blue truck every morning. He takes this guy and the next door neighbor, and they go and do stuff up there.
Yeah.
What the hell they get up to? I've caught them a few times in the mountains.
Yeah.
Doing lots whatever the hell they do. Uh-huh. And I always say to them, like, my standard phrase is just like, hey, just make sure you bring down the plum wood, you know, like, don't forget me, you know,
yeah,
poor little me sitting down here.
You know what I've seen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen you boys operating up here in the forest. So, I mean, the depths of their knowledge, I mean, to tap into those guys' brains,
yeah,
to find out what the hell they've seen up there. But yeah, so...
So funny story. We were in Mongolia a while ago.
Okay.
A couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to name any names.
No, don't do that.
Someone who we met at a guest house.
Mm.
She had just come back from the big city and bought a very expensive perfume.
Oh, right.
And she
it's probably fake.
Could be fake. Who knows?
Paid top dollar, but it's fake. But anyway.
No, that's it could have been.
Yeah.
But we'll never know. Because she set it down. And you know how Mongolians have their fire always going and their gear. They live in portable homes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're big on fires. I mean, yeah, the earths. And...
always keep it going. Oh, to keep the place warm. And it's going all the time.
It's a kind of a tradition, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost igloo-y. It's almost an igloo thing. I mean, they're stones throw across the, you know. They probably crossed over the Bering Straits at some stage of the game.
Yeah, it could have gone that way. Who knows?
Yeah, but, yeah.
And I mean, we were up there in September. It was snowing every day. I mean, it was like -5. That was 2 months ago or more.
Yeah.
Anyway, she came back with this nice box of perfume in a wooden box. And her husband went, like, she went off to do something else. Her husband went, oh, that's a nice box. Oh, here, chucked it in the fire. she thought it was just trash.
And that's something I would do.
Best smelling fire ever.
It's like the greatest smelling fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoopsie.
Shang Sui. They call it Shang Sui.
Oh, fragrant.
Fragrant water. Fragrant water.
That's perfume.
That's perfume, yeah. Oh.
It's such a utilitarian language. Just a lot of the words. Fragrant water as perfume. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've just had the puppy come home, and she rolled herself in a dead fish for like half a day, and she stinks to high heaven.
Also fragrant.
And she actually, that's what cut our podcast off earlier. So we just tell the audience that we had to clip it because of the stinky puppy.
That's right.
We had a stinky puppy.
And
shut us down.
Completely destroyed my equipment.
We got shut down by a stinky dog.
Wow. And I'll confirm, it's a stinky puppy.
She still stinks.
We were walking home to your place and left her outside of a shop. We went in the shop.
Exactly.
And the shopkeeper, what did he say to you?
In Chinese, he said to me, your dog stinks.
Oh, he smelled the dog.
Yeah, he smelled the dog.
Through the door.
You know, and he must have gone outside and he's like trying to engage with the puppy. And he came back and he said, it's been weeks, hasn't it? And I was like, what do you mean? You know, like what are you aiming at? And he's like, I didn't know what his angle was. And he was like, it's been weeks. And I was like, yeah, for what? And he was like, weeks since you washed your dog. And then I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's the stinky dog. Yeah, yeah. I said, we no one's talking to her. We can't stand her. She's not our friend. In fact, that's not my dog. Right. We've disowned her.
Yeah, there you go.
So we came and washed this animal back here, and Katie gave her a double bath and a double shampoo, and she still stinks.
If nothing else, I think it just spread the smell around.
I think it just. It's like that old Jerry Seinfeld where the car got the car. What is the valet?
Yeah.
The valet had body odor and he stank out the car. No one would buy the car. He had to give the BMW away.
Yeah. Did he just throw the keys?
He gave it to some bum on the street, and even the bum rejected it.
So you got to go up to a bum here and give him a leash.
I got to get my dog away. Yeah. I got to get rid of my dog, man.
See if the bum rejects it. You have bums here? I haven't seen any.
We've got two vagrants. Yeah. One of them is my buddy.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. He's like, so he pulled in. He rides around on a bicycle, and he's always got a flower in his hand.
Ah.
So yeah, this is his modus operandi, right? So he goes and like circumvents the neighborhood, and he picks out. I mean, there's a lot of natural stuff here, so he finds a beautiful flower, which is not difficult to find. He's just god awful. He's just foul. He's a foul beast. And you gotta love him, you know, God love him. But he's got this flower and he prances around and off he goes. And so he's walking around with this beautiful flower, and that's his way. So I met him down at the Family Mart, which is a convenience store down the road, and he approaches me and he tells me that he's hungry. So I said, no, all right. So the lunchbox shop, which is the famous lunchbox shop just across the drag, 70 NT gets you a damn hearty meal. 70 NT, that's about $1.
It's like $2.
Two bucks.
US.
$2 US. Yeah. $2.20. $2.20, yeah. $2.20 will get you a whole meal. It'll last you the whole day if you're that hard up. So I gave him 70 NT. Yeah. And I gave him the speech. I said, don't you dare use this money for alcohol or nicotine.
Yes.
And he was like, no, none of that, old boy. And anyway, I had the kids with me, so I was distracted, and off he went. He took my 70 NT. And then I rode around the corner and I saw him coming out of the drag. Yeah. He had a box of smokes. Just bought himself a box of smokes.
I was like, oh shit.
So now the taps are off. Every time he sees me, he packs out laughing because he knows it. I bust him. Because
he
knows. So
I don't think
he's a heavy drinker or anything. He's not a bombed out alcoholic kind of street bum drinking rice wine.
Yeah.
He's not that guy. He's just homeless.
Maybe he's addicted to flowers.
He's got flower things going on, and he loves the betel nuts. So his whole life is getting a bag of betel nuts, a pack of smokes. And then occasionally he'll feed the appetite. Huh. And that's his game. And he lives in a little house at the back here behind the train station.
It's
just a dump. It's just an abandoned room. I found him the other day. Like, I finally found his space. I was taking the kids to school and he came out on his bicycle, like, out. And I was like, ah! Uh-huh. I got you.
I know where you live.
Uh-huh. And he knows where I live because he keeps riding past and then he waves to me. So I'm a bit like, now, oh no. Oh no, he knows who I am. He knows where I live.
Why did you ever give him the money?
Why did I ever make friends with this guy? But I mean, come on, we live in a three-street town, so
right.
you have to familiarize yourself with these lads.
I like this town. It's got some character. You've got a ghost bakery. That's interesting.
We've got the ghost bakery. We've just got a brand new museum that's just opened.
Which is how we met you, actually.
Yeah, that was your draw card, eh?
Right.
You saw the first flags flying.
We haven't gone.
That was big northern money, Taipei money coming down.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of big money coming into the town now, the arty scene, people looking to escape the metropolis. That couple you just saw ride past on an electric bicycle, they're big money. They just like built one of the most expensive guest houses in this area. You know, and they're raising their kids at the same school that I'm raising my kids at, and that's cool. You know, I don't mind. It's all good. It's just a phenomenon, right? It's the rich and land prices have gone up, so property's going through the roof. Anything,
sure.
You know, we it's called a Ming Su. A Ming Su is a guest house, a B&B, a bed and breakfast, and it's just booming. And everyone who's anyone has turned one of their rooms, you know, all their kids have hit the road, gone to the big city, studying, becoming doctors and what have you. You know, the generation, this 50, 60, 70-year-old generation who've got kids, they want their kids to be either lawyers, doctors, engineers, nurses. You know, they're looking for that.
Yeah.
Art is unheard of. Sport is unheard of. Don't you dare. Like if you sign up to become a sports person, that they'll freak. Mm. Now things are changing. Things are changing out here. But that generation's children are all very professional. And we have an overabundance of these type of professionals on the island.
Huh.
There's just too many of them.
Too many doctors.
We have too many doctors, too many lawyers, too many accountants, because they've all been pushed into that way of thinking.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Time for some art.
Time for some art. And now this whole rejuvenation has come into this town where we have these very wealthy factory owners who own commercial food factories, you know, producing stuff that comes in supermarkets and 7-Elevens and, you know, convenience stores, and they've got way too much money. They have no idea what to do with it. So they start investing it out here. This is the new trend. They start plowing the money back into the system.
It's interesting how these trends go.
Yeah.
It used to be everybody wanted to move to the big city. Now it's...
Now everyone wants out.
Now. Now it's too crowded. They want the small town life.
Mm.
I can't blame them.
Nah. Yeah, like cities it. For suckers, hey.
Yeah.
You want to pay that kind of money for that kind of environment.
Well, the thing is here, even in this little town, you just walk three blocks and you found the grocery store, the hardware store.
Now, and now with the internet. Anything but the candle store. Now with the internet, online, I mean, delivery services is just massive. So, island-wide... Delivery service, courier service is the word I'm looking for, courier.
Uh-huh.
This like 24-hour courier service, you can literally buy anything you want on the internet and it'll be delivered to you in 24 hours. It's just all available.
It's totally amazing.
And it's sitting in these big warehouses up in Taipei, up in Taoyuan near the airport. It's all flown in, shipped in, distributed, and it's you know, it's at your doorstep, man.
It's ridiculous.
You don't need to live in the big city.
Right. I mean, it's 24 hours, though. You know, it's not 2 hours. When we lived in Beijing, we'd order stuff online on Taobao, and 2 hours later, there'd be a knock on our door.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's insane, because the distribution center is right there. And how much did it cost? Oh, I don't know, 25 cents, 50 cents for the delivery.
Well, that's the luxury of living in Beijing.
Yeah.
Taipei is pretty much the same, I think.
Here you got to wait 24 whole hours to get your stuff.
Yeah, but I'm on the East Coast, man. I'm 400 kilometers you know, I'm as the crow flies, I'm probably 100 kilometers, but no one can get over the mountain. The crow can't even get over the mountain. So, so everyone's got to go around the north, come all the way down. The central mountain is a big problem here. Aeroplanes cannot fly over the central mountain and then descend to land.
Sure, so, yeah, makes sense.
So you've either got to go way down, so yeah, 3,500 meters, man.
Yeah. And it's not a big island to house that big of a mountain.
450 kilometers by 150 at best.
Right.
450 north-south, 150 east-west. So, and then you're looking at a 3,500 meter peak.
Damn.
We've got 10 peaks that are over 3,000 meters on this island. Huh. And that's one of the call cards of the hiking trails. I mean, hiking is big in this country.
Must be.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah.
Big business, big clubs.
Oh, is it that kind of thing? They go in huge groups with
the guys. Yeah, but it's amazing. I mean, it's really been done very well here. Mm. It's been controlled properly. The licensing has been done properly. You need permits to get into the mountains. They restrict the amount of people. One of my good mates is a tour guide here, and he moans and moans and moans about the fact that he just can't get permits to get up into the mountains. And he's got clients like just bubbling over. And as I said, it's coming out to the East Coast now has become a corporate exercise. So big companies are like, oh, well, what are we going to do? Team building. Let's send the whole damn crew down to the East Coast and they can all groove it up there.
Do trust falls.
Do a bit of fires and, you know,
barbecue.
Swimming barbecues, hiking, sitting in the hot springs, going on walks, you know, riding bikes. The bikes are huge. Bicycles are just massive.
Yeah.
Massive, like just like 30, 40, 50, 100 bicycles in tow, same gear, same hats, same everything with like support cars, you name it.
It's so funny to see.
Yeah,
the conformity here.
Yeah, conformity. I love it.
Just on our way to the park today, we saw, 20, 30 people on bicycles all attached to each other being pulled around by one car. It looked like that game Centipede.
A golf cart.
Yeah. Golf cart. Right?
Yeah, it was a golf cart.
Like you want to make sure you don't eat yourself.
Eat yourself.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the traffic accident. I'm waiting. We have these horrendous accidents out here. We've got these bicycle paths and they're out in the rice paddies. It's the old agricultural roads that have been turned into bicycle paths, and they get given on Google, and there's like maps and stuff. And we so regularly hear ambulances going out there, and I've caught a few of them. And then these guys are literally like going off the path and plowing into the rice paddy, going into the sluice gates.
The water run,
you know. So there's like a drain pipe that runs the water into the rice paddies, and it's quite a deep sluice. It's quite a nasty place to fall down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's regular here.
Just because they don't know how to ride a bike?
Yeah, they're just like first-time bike riders, like coming out here. And I've actually seen kids. I've actually seen like young kids, like they've got bikes with kid seats. And then parents come with their like 1.5-year-old baby and they strap them in and they hit the road. Off they go and they're having a great day. And then they slam off into a bloody, and then the baby's all broken. Oh goodness.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I laughed, but I did hit.
No, you don't want to laugh. Yeah,
I did hit two trees during this trip in the same day.
You've hit two trees on the same day?
Yeah, before.
Was there a couple of beers involved? Or?
No alcohol.
No alcohol.
It was just nighttime and it was pitch black.
Oh, that'll
and
do it. Yeah.
I was looking down at a phone because I was looking at a map trying to figure out where the hell we were going. And We had just gotten over a flat tire and trying to find our campsite.
All
of a sudden, whoa, we're out of nowhere. Bam. Regular George of the Jungle.
Yeah, that'll do it. My riding here, I always wear a helmet.
Yeah.
As nerdy as it looks, even if I go down to the markets, I just wear a helmet, man. I just put my helmet on as a matter of like procedure, because you just never know. I mean, I'm a tall guy. I'm 6 foot. So if I'm coming down from that height on a bike, so I'm now probably 7.5, 8 foot on a bike, yeah, on the saddle. If like when I'm perched, perched at that, it's a long way down. Your head, yeah, hits the asphalt, man. You're gonna crack it open like a watermelon, you know. Whoa, Tai Lianga.
Got a visitor.
Shao Heizer, can you find my? Hello. Some pizza, do you want to
eat?
Yes, pizza, where are
you? Some pizza, where are you?
Oh. You go to where? I'm going
to
my mom. Oh. Fan Chai, right? Yes, Fan Chai. Okay.
Sorry for the interruption, folks. We just got some little time discussions going.
A little bit of Mandarin. I'm testing my Mandarin out on my mother-in-law. Yeah. She understood me. Winnie, close the door, boy.
This is a multicultured podcast.
We
expect everyone to speak Mandarin. All of my listeners speak it.
And if we could get Stinky Puppy on the scene.
Yeah.
If you could smell my dog right now.
Oh.
That would be amazing. If I could
scratch his stiff phones.
Yeah, scratch. Google did an April Fool's on that one. You know that? It was called the Google Sniff. It was called Google Sniff. On April Fool's, they like released this advert where they asked you to scratch your phone and you could like smell, and like there were people like literally scratching the screen.
Oh, that's a good idea, because all these people need new screens now.
Now I'm so stupid. Like, you can get the sensation of a strawberry field if you scratch the screen right now, or the smell of a puppy's foot, or, you know, they enticed you, and they did it so well, and they released this ad, they put a lot of money into it, and of course, then they took footage of people scratching their screens to try to get what's it called? Scratch and sniff.
Yeah,
the old days. We used to have scratch and sniff.
You get a little magazine and they'd say scratch this and smell it. And,
Stickers.
Stickers.
Yeah, right, yeah, right, there were stickers.
But again, we're laughing. But if someone's listening to this podcast in the year 2050, they're probably like, why is that funny? We already have
the release. Yeah. We have a phone.
Yeah,
absolutely. We have a phone that releases enzymes into the air.
Right.
And gives us a sensation while we're watching a movie.
Yeah, that's not funny. Yeah. That's just reality.
Yeah, while we're watching the movie, the enzyme is released. It goes up our nose. We smell the food that they're cooking.
Yeah.
We can do it.
Everyone does that.
Yeah, come on.
Back in those days.
Standard.
You had the flat, no-smell days.
Yeah.
It's just, it's practically black and white.
Yeah, exactly. Black and white TV. Yeah. This is multicultural. Multisensory.
Remember the movie Airplane? There's a...
What, with the snakes? No, no.
No, that's snakes on a plane.
That's snakes on a plane.
That's a different one.
Airplane, but it was a spoof.
It was
the funny one.
Yeah, really funny movie.
Where the guy had to land the plane and he was a novice.
There's a scene, though, where the guy's driving down the road and he gets a call on his phone and he starts just talking on his phone in his car.
Yeah.
And I was like, you never have more than like 30 seconds in this movie without a joke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, like a couple minutes has gone by, nothing funny has happened.
What's happening? Yeah.
Why? And then I realized, oh, that's the joke. Because this was filmed in like 1980 and it was like no one thought that you'd have a phone in your car.
Ah! And like,
it was hilarious to them that, oh, you're going to have a phone in your car?
So I got a joke for you. So my older sister, the noise pollution, man. Hang on, let's let the motorbike go by.
You can't escape it.
Yeah. No. You got to deal with it, guys. If you're listening to us, you got to handle the scooters, all right? You got to handle the little engines starting up and turning off all the time.
Nothing else we can do.
So I don't know if you guys all remember where there was this sensation around the world where they would make gizmo phones that looked like hamburgers and footballs, and there was that era
before cell phones.
It was probably before cell phones.
Ah, okay.
And there was a shop in our supermarkets, in our super mall or whatever you call it, in our mall. And they were the new phone that was called the phone shop or whatever it was called. And they had all these like plastic enhanced phones that like looked like a dog or a football or a pizza or whatever it might be. This was the latest trend. So my mom and I were in the shop, and it had a speakerphone. A speakerphone was a sensation. It was like, wow, it can go on a speaker. Like, you can actually hear the voice with like not sticking it on your ear.
It was a
loudspeaker. Yeah, but it was all exciting. It was so amazing. So I went to the shop, and I was a youngster. And I had my sister's like 8 years older than me. So my superior in many respects. And as a young boy, I was like, oh wow, and it was this puppy. And the shop store owner said, you can make a call. This phone is connected. This one's actually got a line in it.
Oh, wow.
You can make. So I phoned home. 469-491, which was the number. So I phoned home, ET phoned home, and the phone rang, and it was the sensation of having this dog, you know, and my mom was just like killing time. I was like 7 or 8 years old. Uh-huh. And my sister picked up, and I was like, hi. I said, it's me, Dave. And I'm calling from this phone, and there's a dog, and it's like a speakerphone. I was so excited. And she said, oh, David, just fuck off. But it was like the whole shop heard. There was like 20 people in the shop like anticipating this call. And I just got like shafted. Like my sister just sank me. My mom was furious. She got home. She was just like, how could you have done that? You embarrassed me. And she was like, oh, I had no idea you're on a speaker. What's a speakerphone? These are the days when SodaStream had just started, you know? We got excited about soda streams.
The make your own soda thing?
Yeah, make your own soda, and you got the own mix, and you got the bubble, and you got the bottle, and you put, you know, and you had the carbon dioxide.
Exciting times.
Exciting stuff, man. Jeez.
God, what was life like before that?
Cross the oceans to get that, man.
Yeah, not even worth living.
Yeah. Hmm. Flashdance. Queen.
You came in that era.
All the good stuff, yeah.
Well, I remember, this is funny, man. Like yesterday we met, and then I called you, and then you said, like, come on over. Oh, how can I direct this guy to my house? What'd you say? Like, go down the road.
I said, how can I lure you to my...
Oh, lure.
I said, how can I lure you to my house? that was my catchphrase, yeah. I thought, let me throw in the Jeffrey Dahmer thing.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, just...
I'm a big fan.
Put it in the mix, yeah. Just, like, freak these guys out, like, come into my place. Maybe he's a mass murderer. Yeah, maybe he's a freak.
Now let's check this guy out.
Yeah. Kind of lure you to my cove.
So the way you lured me in was, you said, just walk until you see the Golden Buddha.
Exactly.
And then look to your right and listen for the sound of Led Zeppelin. Escaping from my doorway. And you'll know you have arrived.
Oh, that's the public telephone ringing. I think that might be our call to sign off.
Oh, okay.
I think that might just be our shut off.
This could be a speakerphone.
That's the speakerphone,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's get this barbecue going on.
It's great to have you, and welcome, and safe trips, and...
It's been
what
awesome
have you? Yeah. So
yeah, thanks for inviting us over.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Place.
I hope you enjoyed the luring, and and the Big Valley. So
it's been amazing.
It's the Big Valley. Yeah.
What a life.
All right, we're gonna cook some food now. Signing off.
Thanks once again to David Shand for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. For more information about my book, 1,000 Days Between, Parts 1 and 2, there's two books, remember, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com.
That's the number 1000, daysbetween.com. Thanks once again for listening, and I'll catch you next time.